Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 8th. I'm Ray Graff. When was the last time you had your car in for a tune-up? Well, with so many businesses closed during the pandemic, maybe you can't get your car to the shop. If so, turn the radio up, because Gordon Fricke is back with his automotive repair and maintenance advice. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car... your calls and your car calls at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show when Gordon's here, so call early, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke and your car calls coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He studied in Germany, so you know he's very pragmatic and efficient. If you have a question about cars, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us your question at WAMC. No, the email address, Ray, if you've never done the show, you nitwit, is voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, these remote broadcasts where our guests aren't here have me discombobulated. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How about you, Ray?
Yeah, you know, we're hanging in there. How's the family health-wise?
Everybody is fine. We're all being as absolutely careful as we possibly can. I'm considered essential, so the shop is open and we are working.
Aren't you lucky? I am also essential, so
yes.
I'm working as well. Well, you know, you got to keep the cars running. And to start the show, before we get into some of the things you can do when you are home and your car sits idle, let's go for a couple of questions from our producer, Jackie Orchard. Now, let me preface this, Gordon, by telling you that Jackie has named her car. She drives a 2013 Kia Soul. She's named it Tony.
Oh.
After Tony Stark, you know, Iron Man. So just putting that out there. Now the questions. How long, Jackie writes, after you start to hear that slight squeaking sound, can you wait before you absolutely need new brake pads?
That's a really good question.
Yes.
Not all cars have these audible wear indicators. Hers might. And if it does, it gives you a pretty good period of time before you really are going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
It's hard to put a mileage on that, but certainly weeks would be not a problem. Some cars have electronic sensors, and they'll turn a light on inside the car.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of Audis and Volkswagens and BMWs, and some of those sensors come on so far in advance, you could almost go another 6 months.
Right.
But I think for now, if that thing just started squeaking, she's got some time.
You have a little time, Jackie. All right. Well, that's good to know. She didn't hear you because she's answering the phones, but we'll tell her
now,
later.
I have one question. She named a Korean car an Italian name.
Oh, you make a point. But I mean, of course, Tony Stark was a true red, white, and blue American. Iron Man, you know, right?
Okay, so we're mixing American, Korean, and Italian. That's good. It's a world economy.
She calls herself a globalist, and she's a little eccentric. Her second question, even more interesting. My uncle is a mechanic, she writes, and he says the newer vehicles made after about 2010, after 10,000 miles, are programmed to have the check engine light come on every few thousand miles in order to get you to take it to the shop so the dealer can get more money out of you. Is this true?
It is not true, but it seems like that could be the case because we see a lot of check engine lights and they are coming on for more and more causes or reasons. Some are important that need to be taken care of fairly quickly. Others aren't as critical and can certainly wait. So yeah, those warning lights definitely are something nowadays.
Okay, and you know, it's kind of funny. She named her Kia Soul after Iron Man. Is there any iron on a Kia Soul, by the way?
That's a good question, because the engine, you know, a lot of engine blocks were and are still made out of cast iron,
yeah,
where the cylinder heads and the external components are aluminum and plastic. But a lot of engines are completely aluminum. There might be a little bit of iron in the car, but the content would not be very high.
Okay, so we could maybe call it Aluminum Man instead.
That would be wise. Aluminum, or maybe Plastic Man.
Plastic, yeah. Man. I think that was a different superhero. All right, let's grab a call or two before the first break. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We go to Joel in Catskill. Joel, you're on. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Somebody wants to
talk. Yes.
All right. Thanks. All right. Hello.
Great. Your secretary said it's okay. So welcome, Joel.
Hi. My issue is I have a 2002 Volkswagen Passat. It's a wagon, and I lost my key, and it's one of those specially programmed keys.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So what does one do in that instance?
So I know I'm asking a dumb question. You have no other keys to that car, period?
No. Sadly, I bought the car used, and when I asked the gentleman I bought it from if he had a spare, no, he didn't. And
yes.
It was one and only spare, one and only key, rather.
Okay. So you've
and
got two options.
Yes.
Yep. You've got two options. Those laser-cut keys in Volkswagens and Mercedes-Benz have been around long enough to where the mobile locksmiths, the guys that have all the latest equipment, a lot of these guys can produce that key for that car, and they can also program it to the vehicle, and they can do that at your home in many cases. So first thing to do would be to contact a automotive mobile locksmith and ask him the questions if he can do that for you. If that is not practical, towing the car to a Volkswagen dealer is your next option.
Right. I understand that one.
It's not, neither are the best option, but the mobile locksmith guys can do those cars. Where are you? Where do you live? Where is the car located?
I'm in Round Top is the hamlet near Carroll, Catskill, Greene County area. I'm down south.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think you could probably do some searching to see who's out there that can make a key for that car and bring it to the car and program it.
All right. Hey, Joel,
but that's
thanks
the only
a lot.
Option.
Thanks
yep.
for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And we'll take a break here in a moment, Gordon Fricke. But one email came in, and this is from, it's Rita. And Rita says, would you please review the advice about adding injection / engine cleaner to the gas tank?
Sure. What I recommend is a very professional, powerful product, and we've mentioned that the chemical that's in this, which is called Techron, T-E-C-H-R-O-N, and you can get it in different sized bottles. The 20-ounce bottle is the big dose. If you really need a cleanup, let's say you've never put any in and the car's got some mileage on it, put a 20-ounce bottle in the tank, fill the tank, and then run that tank full close to empty, as close as you feel comfortable. Maybe when the gas light comes on, go fill her up, and you got that full tank full of cleaner. After that point, you can put in smaller bottles at various intervals. I recommend a bottle every oil change. It's a really easy time to do it. And depending on your oil change intervals, you're going to be doing that anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 to 5,000 miles. Hopefully you don't go much more than that.
Yeah.
And that will keep everything clean and maintained.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Cars Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. More of your calls coming up. And good heavens, if Jackie, the producer, asks another question, I may just retire. But we'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Gordon Fricke, our guest today. It's cars at 800-348-2551. Alexandria writes in, Gordon, check engine lights is the subject heading, and she nails it pretty well. They're called dummy lights for a reason.
Well, you know, they used to call that the common term years ago would be idiot light.
Oh, okay.
You remember the days when they said, oh, the idiot light came on? And I don't know how it ever got that bad reputation because, man, when those lights came on those older cars, you didn't have much time to react. If the oil light came on, you better stop right away.
Right.
Or if the overheat light, which was also red, came on, you needed to pull over. So dire consequences usually resulted. So I don't know where the term idiot came from. Maybe driving with the light on till you blew the engine?
I don't know, but we'll just move on. The number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get back to the phones, flush from the success of her questions being read on the air, Jackie, our producer, is giving me another one. Jackie writes, my fiancé left his 2017 Mazda in West Virginia outside for the duration of his deployment. It has been sitting for almost a year now. What problem should we anticipate when we go retrieve it? And that is from Jackie, the producer.
Oh, man, a year is a long time.
You betcha.
I would normally be asking questions as to if it was parked inside rather than out somewhere.
No, it's outside.
It's out in the elements.
West Virginia, yeah.
Oh, boy. So the brake rotors, the brake discs are going to be extremely rusty from sitting out in that weather all those months. Not to say that it's not going to be able to move, drive, and go, but I think there's going to be some brake issues.
Okay.
The battery will be almost guaranteed finished from being out of service that long.
Yeah.
A battery goes dead naturally. It discharges and goes into a state where there's nothing going on in there.
Yeah.
And when that happens, the electrolyte, the liquid in the battery, will freeze where normally it won't. You always wonder, how can your battery be out there at 20 below zero and there's a liquid in there?
Yeah.
When that liquid is in the state of charge, its freezing point is super, super low. But when it's discharged, I don't know if it's near where water is. But anyway, it'll freeze.
Yeah.
Then it'll warp or distort the plates in the battery, and the battery's done. So I got a feeling it's going to immediately need a battery. Probably going to need some brake work. But because all cars today are fuel injected and the fuel tanks and vent systems are pretty well sealed, she may have some stale, or he may have some stale gasoline in there, but it may fire up and run okay.
Yeah, okay.
So what I would do is add a bottle of fuel. There's a stabilizer and rejuvenator that you can pour in the gas tank.
Yeah.
And it'll kind of freshen up what's in there. So I would definitely pour a dose of the rejuvenator in it before you do anything.
All right.
And then see if it'll start.
You know, my question for Jackie, and I won't ask her this because I don't want to embarrass her, but if she drives a 2013 Kia and her fiance has a 2017 Mazda sitting in West Virginia, why didn't she take the Mazda up here? All right, this email came in from Joshua. Joshua writes, I was informed my car had a blown head gasket, but it seems to drive fine. A Volvo specialist mentioned trying bars stop leak, carbon fiber reinforced blown head gasket repair rather than spending $1,500 for fixing the head gasket. I love this car. I've been driving my 850 GLT wagon for the past 4 months. Would trying this mechanic in a bottle hurt other components of the car? And that's from Josh in Walden, New York.
Yeah, that's actually a good question because a head gasket can leak in a variety of different ways. And the least harmful is an external coolant leak, where the coolant is getting past the head gasket and running out between the head and the block and, you know, dripping on the ground.
Right.
Rather than leaking internally, going into a cylinder, that kind of thing, or a combustion leak. That is absolutely non-fixable with anything you can pour in it. But if it's an external leak, you can definitely try a sealant, a product that you pour in the coolant. And you really don't have too much to lose. It's not going to ruin other things.
Okay.
And Subaru actually had a head gasket leak issue in the 2000s, probably the whole decade. And they actually provided customers with a bottle of They called it cooling system conditioner.
Yeah.
And it was to prevent or to stop these minor external leaks. And the stuff worked remarkably well.
But will it work on a Volvo?
It'll work in any engine whatsoever.
Okay.
So he could go to a Subaru dealer, and I would put two bottles in and see what it does. Or you can go to the auto parts store, and there's a variety of different ones you can buy.
All right. Now, this is the last email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Paul in Hudson, who says he loves his German engineering. It is a Mercedes-Benz E320 wagon heating system. Gordon, I have a 2009 Mercedes-Benz E320 wagon. Love this car. It's also a Florida car. Has only been in New York for about a year and a half and not driven in winter. That said, I noticed that the heating system doesn't work. The fan blows, but it is iced cold. Until last summer, the AC worked fine. Unfortunately, the fan started to go last summer. Can hear the bearing, so that now needs to be replaced. However, the primary question is, what do you think is causing the heat not to work? And, drum roll, is it a big deal to fix? And that is from Paul in Hudson.
Yeah. Cars even of that vintage don't have a heater control valve anymore. Years ago, you controlled your heat with basically a faucet that was controlled by the dashboard.
Yeah.
You remember your 65 Le Mans?
Oh, heck yeah.
So when you turned that, when you pushed that dial from hot to cold, you were opening and shutting a hot water valve outside near the engine.
Really?
Yes. So you were just shutting off the hot water flow to the heater. Today's cars, that water is continuously flowing through the heater. It's called the heater core or heat exchanger,
yeah.
if you want the German translation. But so car like his, there's what's called a blend door, and the blend door mixes outside cooler air with hot air going past the heater core to the taste of the driver, however warm they want it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that his blend door is stuck in the cold position.
Interesting.
Could be because it's been in Florida its whole life and it's stuck cold. And to change the blend door actuator on some cars is not a terrible job. I don't know about that Mercedes-Benz if it's in a terrible location, but I'd be very curious about the blend door motor or blend door actuator. That could be his problem 100%.
Now, interesting, you know, my son's 2000 Blazer has an issue where every year or two we have to blow out the heater core. So
yeah.
it heats up well. This is not a situation in that Mercedes where the heater core needs to be unclogged?
I'm glad you thought of that, because that is not totally impossible, because not only your son's Blazer, and I had one of those Blazers years ago, and I had to flush my heater out almost every fall, and I got another vehicle that I have to flush out at least once a year. So, yes, that's a very good thought. It's very possible that heater core just needs to be flushed out. So that's
okay.
That's definitely a step one.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551, and Portia in Leverett is probably irritated because she's been waiting a while. Go ahead. You're on.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm not at all irritated. I'm really relieved to have a question that I could ask that's not about the virus.
Okay.
So here goes.
You're on.
I have a 1993 Volvo station wagon, and it has an odd thing that it does, which is if it rains, then after it rains, the next time I try to go someplace, it does not start.
So it cranks and cranks and cranks and cranks, but won't fire up?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's allowed to dry out entirely, it starts like there was never a problem?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's a 1993.
Yeah, Volvo.
So is it an 850?
240.
A 240?
That's a station wagon.
What year is it again?
1993, 240.
That's the last year they made them, isn't it?
I know.
Oh, boy.
You've got
a very... I don't know if I should say culty, but that's a sought after car.
Oh, really?
Yes. I get lots of
comments about my car. I just want to know, thank you. I'm glad I have this car, but it doesn't start in the rain. And once in a while, that is a problem.
Yeah.
Usually I just say, okay, I'll try again later.
Yeah. So that's not too critical on that car, because that's kind of an old school ignition system. What's happening is the ignition system, the high tension part of it, is leaking. And when it's high moisture, the spark that is supposed to be going from a component called the ignition coil to the spark plugs is not making it there. It's being gobbled up by the moisture, and your spark is not making it to the engine. So what usually is the case is possibly it might need an ignition coil, but it probably needs new spark plug wires and maybe spark plugs while you're there, but the spark plugs are not moisture sensitive. And I can't remember on a 240, because we used to work on lots of them, but I haven't seen one in probably decades. distributor cap and rotor, if it has one. I can't remember. But basically, it's called the secondary ignition, and that's where your problem is. So that's not going to be a major event to get fixed, but it's got to go to a repair shop.
Okay. Well, that's really clear. Very helpful, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Portia. We appreciate it. Yeah, about 30 years ago, 28 years ago, I had an Escort GT, and after about 100,000 miles, I wasn't even thinking about it, I'd stop at a stop sign or a stoplight in the rain, and it would just stall. Turned out it was the plugs. It was an easy fix, and it ran for another 100,000 miles, I think.
Yeah, that moisture is a big issue. It's way less of a problem now because the ignition systems have changed. But in the days of that Volvo, it's definitely was a problem.
All right, back to the phones. Gordon Fricke, our guest, 800-348-2551. Hello, Mary Lou in Plattsburgh. You're on.
Hello. I'm sitting at my sewing machine, not driving my 2015 Prius. And I haven't been driving it much lately. Because I'm making masks. And I wondered if that's going to cause any harm to the car.
Well, how long has it been since you've driven it last?
Well, I drove it this morning to do a grocery run. But at the moment, I'm going about once a week using it.
Yeah, yeah.
For a short run.
So the... the shorter the trip, the worse it is for the vehicle. And I understand we're not, supposed to be out piling on miles just joyriding and whatever. But cars don't like to sit too long out of service, particularly if they're not in a garage, because as the very first, I don't know if it was the first caller, but we talked about a car that had been sitting for a long time. The brakes are going to get rusty and things like that. But if you're driving that car once a week, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you can drive it more, great. But, if you can't, if you're going to let a car sit for a month, and the Prius, depending on the year, what year is your car?
2015.
Did you say? I'm not sure if that's, it's at one point they had a 12-volt battery to start the engine, and then later on they moved away from that. But if you have the 12-volt starting engine battery, that will eventually peter out if the car sits way too long. Definitely drive it when you can, but don't go crazy and try to pile, 100 miles every 2 days on it.
Okay.
Hey, Mary Lou, how many masks are you going to make?
I hit 200 on Monday.
Wow.
I'm doing some for my doctor's office now and some for some home health care aides for an agency for them. The rest have been like family, friends, church folks, neighbors, like that.
Hey, thank you for your service. We appreciate it very much. Have a great day. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Cars Today. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Mark in Salem, New York. Mark.
Hi, Ray. I've got a 1975 MGB that I took off the road last fall, took the battery out, and the battery's on a battery tender, and I put up the gas extender and a full tank of gas with an extender in it, and it's in a garage with a cover over, and I'm getting ready, I'm anxious to get out on the road, and I was wondering what I should do as far as the engine. Should I put a little bit of oil in the cylinders before I turn the key, or should I turn the engine by hand a little bit before I start up? Because it is a 1975 engine.
Yeah.
It has 65,000 miles on it.
So let's see, a 75 MGB, that's rubber bumpers, right?
It has a polyurethane bumpers.
Yeah, yeah. Carburetor, I don't think they ever injected that car, did they? Is it carbureted?
No, it's a double SUs.
Yeah, oh, they're right. Okay, yeah. So oiling the cylinders, no. The time to have done that might have been when you put it away in the fall, or they make a fogging oil that you can spray. And in those SU carburetors, it's easy to do, but you could fog it in the fall, and that kind of coats the inside of the engine. But at this stage, you really don't need to do anything but start it the way you normally would. And there's a choke lever in the car and all that stuff. So I wouldn't do anything out of the ordinary. I would just go through your normal starting procedure and keep it up on high idle. So the oil pressure is nice and high, and the engine's getting, you know, all of its lubrication. You don't want to let the car sit and run at low, a very low, blubbering, you know, on the brink of stalling. You want to have that.
You
want to
get the oil
idle.
Up into the valve train.
Yep. Okay. It wants to be on what's considered cold, fast idle. And that's going to be the best thing for it. Just let it warm up and, you know, use it like you normally do.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551. One more call before our next break. Mike in Postenkill. Mike, you're on.
Thank you. I have a 2006 Subaru B9 Tribeca with 185,000 miles. And recently, it blew a code of a misfire for 1, 3, and 5. It happened only after it was wet. I reset the code. It runs fine. And then the last few times when it had rained and I left it outside, it misfired again. So I'm kind of wondering what I should do.
Yeah. When you say wet, like it sat overnight and then the next day you experienced that?
Yes. It sat overnight outside on nights that it rained. It actually had rained. And, that I think that's what I mean by wet.
Did it run poorly that day for a little while?
Actually, it didn't run poorly. It, for a couple of seconds, it ran poorly, and it seemed to have the fire, they ran fine after that. It's run smooth. I'm driving it now.
Yeah.
And actually, the last time it did it threw on the check engine light for maybe a couple of seconds, back and forth, and then it seemed to resolve itself. The light went out, and it's running smooth.
And you got misfires on cylinders 1, 3, and 5.
Correct.
Okay. Ordinarily, I'd be suspicious of the ignition coil.
Mm-hmm.
And your Tribeca is Subaru's 6-cylinder, where the traditional Subaru was a 4-cylinder. And we used to replace or still do a lot of ignition coils. And a lot of times it will affect cylinders that are on the same coil. What they do is they take, they branch off your cylinders. Like on the 4 cylinders, there's 2 coils in a pack. And 1 coil fires 2 of your cylinders. So I have a feeling that you might have a coil pack that's getting bad, and that's why it's beating up those 3 cylinders because half of it might be failing.
All right, Mike, we got to take a break here, but thank you for calling. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 1-800-348-2551, the number. More of your emails, more of your calls coming up. Canadian hard rock stylings of Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush. You don't hear much Frank on the public radio, probably for a good reason. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's Gordon Fricke today. And Gordon, I got to tell you, I think people were ready to talk cars. The lines are completely loaded here, sir. So.
Well, you know, we're all, you know, getting pretty stressed about the whole situation. And you do need some relief. You need to do something other than listen to the news all the time.
No, tell me
so
about
it.
I get it.
Yeah.
This is an email that came in from Lee in Oneonta. I own a 2019 Toyota Highlander. I recently received a recall notification that the fuel pump could at any time run rough and stall the vehicle. This condition would then render the car from operating. The recall said at this time they have no remedy. How safe is the car to operate? And do you have any idea how long these recalls take to fix the issue?
Oh, boy. You know, right now that could be a tough one because...
Yeah.
Let's say the remedy is a fuel pump or the fuel pump control module.
Yeah.
And everybody's shut down and you can't get a good supply out to the dealers who are all on kind of skeleton crews right now. That could be a bit of an issue. So there's been cars with similar recalls in the past. I remember Volkswagen sent one out. And I can't remember what other brand it was, but my wife's car experienced it many years ago. It just plain quit, stopped running, towed it in. It was the fuel pump control module. And when they fail, you're done. The engine doesn't run anymore.
Yeah.
So the reason it's hit the recall status is because, let's say you've pulled out into a massive intersection or an interstate highway and your engine just shut off. You could potentially be in trouble where you can't get out of the way or you can't accelerate and you get into a crash. That's what the worry
is. Yeah. But
right. So I guess what I would recommend to anybody that got that recall is just be a little bit more aware of when you pull out and where you're going in the back of your mind. Just have a backup plan. What do I do if my engine quits right now?
So
you know, I do this all the time. If I'm stopped to turn and there's a lot of traffic piling up behind me, and I like to keep a one or two car lengths ahead of me, just in case I hear squealing tires or I see somebody that doesn't know I'm stopped, I'm trying to figure out if I can get out of there, you know?
Right.
So just be a little more aware.
That's what we called in the old driver ed days, always leaving out. Remember?
Yeah,
aim
exactly.
High and everything else. This is from Fran. Subject heading, and this is very appropriate for our time, subject heading, shelter in place. My 2017 Chevy Volt is used to a 30-mile round-trip commute. Working at home, I'm out maybe once a week, a couple miles. Anything I should be doing differently? And that's from Fran.
Well, so the Volt, I think, is a plug-in.
I think, yeah, straight-up electric, right?
Yeah, so keep it charged.
Yep.
And I don't think there's any real downside other than any car that has brakes. If it's parked outside, they might get rusty.
Yeah.
But, and you know, we see that so often here, even on cars that are used regularly. But no, I don't think there's any major downside there. Keep it charged and, you know, use it when you need to.
All right. This one is from Corey, and then we'll get back to the phones. I'm envious of Corey. Corey is in Saratoga. Corey writes, I have a 1971 Cadillac DeVille with about 70,000 miles. Oh, Corey, you're lucky. Corey writes, the oil light often comes on, even though I've changed the oil multiple times, currently have it topped off. No oil is leaking. No smoke is coming out of the car. Any suggestions besides give the car to Ray? But we don't want, I couldn't accept it, Corey, but thank you for the offer.
All right, so you don't want me to condemn the car and see if you can get this thing cheap?
That would be unethical, Gordon.
Yeah.
So let's just answer his question.
Yeah. So a 71 Caddy, old school oil pressure warning light. So basically what you have is you've got a pressure switch down on the engine. When you start the engine, the oil pressure builds. It pushes the switch and turns the light off, and everybody's happy. If the light comes on for a real reason, as in low oil pressure, your engine's potentially in some trouble. However, those pressure switches certainly were known to go bad and turn the light on unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I would get it checked confirm that the oil pressure is good. It's an easy test on a big old car like that. And my guess is it's just going to need a new oil pressure sensing switch, quick and easy fix. Very, very enjoyable repair on a car like that based on how complicated and packed cars are today.
And that's why the old cars are better, Gordon. I've said that every show since you've been on now all these years. Let's go back to the phones. Bill in Long Meadow, Mass. Bill, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2008 Volkswagen Jetta, 5-cylinder. It's an automatic transmission. And when it warms up, the transmission starts running harder. It's a symptom of, I guess, I've read about, but is there anything I can do? There's no way to service those transmissions either.
So when you say running harder, what are you experiencing? What are the symptoms?
It bangs through first, second, and third. And even slowing down, it may bang into third gear. That's an automatic.
Yep. Have you had the fluid level checked?
No, on this car, Gordon, there's no, on those Volkswagens, there's not even a dipstick.
Well, yes,
there is a way. No, I haven't had it checked, but it has to be done by the garage.
Yeah, the consumer can't check the oil, and it drives me absolutely nuts that they have eliminated transmission dipsticks. You probably have low fluid, and it has to be checked at a shop level, up on a lift, engine running, and there's a special plug that you remove, and there's a way to add fluid to it. I could almost guarantee you're low on fluid that's causing those symptoms. And yes, Volkswagen and some other car companies are saying that it is a no service required automatic transmission, but you certainly can drain and refill that fluid. And that fluid, how many miles around the car?
113.
I guarantee you that fluid looks terrible. It's probably very, very, very dark. So two things you can do. You don't flush those. There's no equipment that does them, and it takes a special fluid. But I think what I would do is get it to a shop, tell them what you're experiencing, ask them if they could check the level, check for leaks, get the level back up to where it should be, and see if that solves it. And if it does, it might not be a bad idea to just do a drain and refill. Not a big shocking flush, but just the way Audi and Volkswagen used to write it was, if you had dirty fluid and you wanted to replenish it, they had a procedure where you would drain it, refill it, run the vehicle, drain it, and refill it, and maybe do that three times. So you don't shock the transmission, and then you get good, clean, fresh fluid in there. You're not going to flush it out, and it's not going to be perfect like the day it was new, but you're going to restore the majority of that fluid. I got a feeling that's what's happening to your car.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Steve is in Saugerties. Hiya, Steve. You're up.
Hey, guys. Question for you. Last night it rained, and as per usual after the rain, I've got water on the inside of the cabin of my 2005 Jeep Liberty. It's got a sunroof, which seems tight all around, but obviously maybe not. Is there something that I can do? I've done some YouTube stuff. It looks like major surgery. Is it really as complicated as it seems?
It can be. Could you ever see the water up around the headliner, or where do you see the water?
The water is always down by my feet on both the passenger side and mostly on the driver's side.
So all sunroofs have drains. When that roof shuts, it's not sealed tight to the roof of the car. It's a pretty tight fit, but it's not watertight. So when it rains, the water gets past the sunroof and it drips down into a surrounding, like a tray that's around the interior part of the sunroof. And there's a drain on each corner connected to a hose that takes the water out. And I would almost guarantee that your drains are partially plugged or fully plugged. And when too much rain occurs, it can't trickle out of there. So cleaning those drains out without major disassembly is The front ones are pretty easy to get to. The rear ones are tougher, but you can, I don't know if you have compressed air available to you, but you need to turn the pressure way, way, way down. You don't want 150 pounds of shop air, but those drains need to be cleared. Sometimes they're plugged up at
you
the ends.
With air versus water?
Pardon me?
You do that with air versus water?
Yeah, well, I've got a very long extension on an air hose that I have a little rubber tip that goes over, and I turn the pressure way down so I can put that little rubber tip in the drain and just give it a couple of sniffs. And then you can test the drain. You can climb up, you know, open the roof fully and then pour water into that area and watch it run out the drain and confirm that every one of them is clear.
Okay.
But sometimes you've got to take the headliner down or the A-pillar trim on the inside, because I've had cars where the hoses over time shrink and unhook, and there's nothing you can do about that other than fix them.
Okay.
But step one is to clear, if you can, clear the drains, do a water test yourself, pour water up in that tray and see if it runs out each corner of the car. And you may be able to get through it yourself without taking it in.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to South Hadley, Massachusetts. And Phil, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I have a 2013 Hyundai Santa Fe with the 2.0 turbo engine in it, and I'm closing in on 120,000. Runs like a top. I've been using synthetic, 100% synthetic in it, but I've been seeing been going to a new shop. And they're saying that their synthetic blend is just as good as a full synthetic. And I've been told that turbos have a tendency to run real hot and that synthetics are better. So I guess that's my question.
Good question. Popular subject, but well worth discussing.
I'm going to hang up, and again, I appreciate the call.
Sure. Thanks, Phil. Go ahead, Gordon.
So the turbocharger takes a leg of the pressurized oil from the engine. So the oil pump pumps oil to the turbo to keep its bearings lubricated and helps to cool the turbo, and then the oil returns back to the oil pan. And that's really hot oil. So the oil is getting really beat up from the turbocharger. So in the early years, Saab was one of the very first car makers to use a turbocharger. And then Audi was into it in the late 70s, early 80s, and a whole bunch of other cars followed. Now just about everybody's got turbos. So it adds more temperature to the oil, and the term called oil coking can happen, and the oil kind of turns into a sludgy, like a deposit that's a disaster. Because the coking builds up and you'll never clean it, and everything will plug up and you're done.
Yeah.
So my recommendation on a turbocharged engine is to use full synthetic. Now, not all car manufacturers even recommend it or require it. And a lot of your big trucks, which are turbocharged diesels, don't have any requirement or recommendation either. But oil is so important today. It's doing so many things inside those engines. It's the absolutely least expensive thing you can do for your car. So to sum it up, I would go full synthetic in that vehicle for sure. It's not that much more money.
All right, over to Alex in Albany. Alex, you're on.
Hi, everybody. Hello, sir. And I'd like it to be electric. And I would like it to be something that's kind of affordable and reliable and safe. Can you recommend a model or a few models to me?
Sure. You cut out very briefly. I think you're asking what full electric vehicle to buy?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. The choices are going to become great, but it's going to take probably about 5 years. What's on the market now... how big of a vehicle are you interested in having? Just a small commuter car?
Yeah, that's what I'd like.
And I can't really recommend any particular brands, but Nissan Leaf's been out quite a while. They seem to have a good reputation. Chevrolet has stumbled with the Volt and now the Bolt, and I don't know a lot about them.
Why did they stumble?
Well, the Volt just didn't, for some reason, I don't know why it didn't really take off well.
Oh, if it was a marketing thing, I see. The car itself is okay?
I think so.
Yeah.
The move to electric is going to be slow and sluggish, and the part of the problem in the U.S., and we could be here the rest of the day talking about this, but...
Well, we have 45 seconds.
Gasoline is still so inexpensive in the U.S. that we are not being forced to get high fuel-efficient vehicles. If gas was running up to $7 a gallon, like within the next year,
yeah,
we'd be screaming for high-efficiency vehicles, but the pressure is not on, so... It's going to take a while. The percentage of vehicle sales in electric and hybrids is extremely low in the U.S.
I got to tell you, my neighbor's son had a Tesla a year or two ago, and he came to town, and it was parked in the driveway. That is an impressive vehicle.
Did you ride in it?
Oh, gosh, no. I wasn't even allowed near the thing, but I saw it from my house, and it was really cool. I mean, that's a sharp car.
And it's high performance. If it's an S model, I rode in one. There's a couple in the area. And the acceleration is mind-blowing.
So I take it you don't put double A's in that thing?
Yeah, about 7,000 of them, right?
All right, Gordon, we're about done here. Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here. Stay safe, and we will talk to you next time. Hopefully you'll be in the studio with us, and good luck.
Yeah. Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Support comes from Pelham Auto Service, Route 9 at the Amherst-Belchertown line at the sign of the Flying Pig, worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, supporting their community with a temporary closure and continuing to explore art and ideas online. For projects and resources, skidmore.edu/Tang. And Ali, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College, offering spring classes in literature, science, music, gardening, and more beginning April 13th. BerkshireAli.org. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Sorry if we did not get to your call. He will be back soon. And thanks to Zach, our engineer, also our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll have two teachers from Bethlehem Central School District to discuss teaching at home during the pandemic, something I have been watching firsthand in my own home. And it's a new and exciting frontier. That's tomorrow at 2. Stand by now for 51%.